This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. It is Thursday, March the 10th, 2005, and we're thrilled to be here working for our veterans and our military today. We have a wonderful informational meeting scheduled today, and if y'all would just allow me, I especially would like to recognize my constituents who are here today, very important to veterans in my county, and I'd just like to have my Yamhill delegation stand up, Yamhill County. This is John Krosick, our Chief Financial Officer, and Diane Salenti, whom you've already met, who is incredible when it comes to services for our veterans. She's our County Service Veteran Officer. All right, this morning, the first thing we'd like to do is, because we have some individuals here who have not testified before this committee, let you know that we are in the movies today, and that you will be fined for using any acronyms, Mr. Penhollis. So be very careful about that. And we set the fee ourselves. We do have a basket at the back, and we trust everyone on their honor that you know that they will account for their own misdeeds as far as acronyms. Thank you very much. Like to ask those who've served in our military to please stand. We want to honor you at this time.
You're here.
We're most grateful for your service for our country, and we know we wouldn't be sitting here today had you not kept us free. We're most grateful. Thank you. Okay, up first today we have from our own Department of Veterans Affairs, our Deputy Director, Paula Brown. Paula, will you come forward, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, my name is Paula Brown. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. With me today, I have Val Conley, and when I turn over the testimony to Val, she can introduce herself for the record. We're here at the request of the committee to provide information about U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs statistics relative to compensation and pension benefits received by Oregonians, veterans. And we have provided copies of a few different pages, and what I'd like to do is turn this over to Val Conley. She's the Veterans Services Division Administrator to walk you through these statistics.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. As Paul stated, I'm Val Conley, Administrator of the Veterans Services Division for Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And the packet you have before you are numbers that we got from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. The top sheet is a sheet that I prepared based on numbers from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. It gives you the basic rankings for each state receiving compensation and pension dollars. And as you can see, Oregon is ranked number 19. Now, the states listed on the left-hand column are above the national average. Those listed in the right-hand column are below the national average. And as you can see, Illinois is at $650 per month per veteran in their state. I don't know why that is. I guess it's a difference in service delivery in each of the states. Right. And these dollars are per capita for each state, for each veteran in that state. That is the average dollar amount that they receive. Any questions on this cover sheet?
Yes, thank you. Val, so this is a per month pension?
This is average per month per veteran in the state.
Correct. And based on our different services, does one size fit all? I mean, when we're looking at this, are we looking at apples to apples?
Every state, Madam Chair, is set up differently. In Oregon, we have Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and then we have the county veterans service officers throughout our state. In the state of Washington, they use contract employees. They contract with American Legion and Veterans of Foreign Wars to provide those services for them, and they are not located in each county in Washington State. So every state's set up differently. Some states use state employees in each county throughout their state. So,
thank you, Val. If I served in World War One, would this compensation, this pension, be the same as if I served in Desert Shield, Desert Storm?
Madam Chair, yes, it would, considering you're still alive.
Thank you. No, I'm just trying to, have these plans changed so much that they're impacted by some new rulings, or has this...
Well, the laws pertaining to benefits have changed throughout the years, and they have added more disabilities because with each different conflict, we see different disabilities now. So, yeah, they do change throughout the years. I mean, they're still even recognizing disabilities today that were caused by radiation exposure 60 years ago. So, yeah, they change all the time.
Any other questions? Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Val, would you very just quickly give a summary of what falls into compensation and what falls into pension? Because we're not talking about military. We're talking about purely VA, Veterans Administration, Iowa Quarter dollars, aren't we not?
Yes, we are. Representative Boquist, we're talking about compensation, which is for service-connected disabilities only. Pension is an income-driven program. It's based on permanent and total disability. These disabilities do not have to be service-connected, and you have to be under a certain income limit or over age 65.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes.
And just for clarification, because I'm a little naive in this area, in those rankings in compensation and pension, whereas you go over to military retirement and medical discharge and medical issues from the federal side, those are generally percentages of a base salary. Is that true of pension, or is pension purely a formula driven that regardless of what their rank structure was in the military?
Pension, Representative Boquist, is regardless of their rank. It say for a single veteran, it's right around $900 a month at the moment. So if you make $500 Social Security, you're going to get $400 in pension because you cannot be over a certain income level. Now, that is also going to be offset by out-of-pocket medical expenses. So you can reduce your income by showing your out-of-pocket medical expenses.
Madam Chair, just a point of clarification.
Yes.
So the reason I ask the question, if active duty medical discharge, which therefore gives you a disability, that is based as a percentage of the disability against your base income. So therefore, for example, if the state had more officers that were from it, it would skew the federal numbers that you would utilize as far as like medical disability and things like that. And that's the reason I wage this. I'm just trying to clarify that these are apples to apples versus apples to oranges.
Correct.
Excuse me, just 1 minute, Representative Barnett. I want to understand. I just think we've had a most horrific situation, and I have empathized with our veterans and their families over the years that I thought I knew this. In our retirement from the service, should we also get disability, that is taken away from our retirement?
Madam Chair, yes.
Well, that is so wrong.
It is wrong.
That to the fact that if I retired from a company, let's say making $1,200 a month. I'm sorry, but anyway.
Or the legislature.
Or the legislature. That's very good.
A raise.
Oh, yes, a raise there. Okay. $1,200 a month. But if I had a workers' comp claim, for example, it would not be taken from my $1,200 a month. Why has the Department of Defense or whomever is responsible for this act continued taking, this disability income from these men and women who have risked their lives, suffered disabilities on the behalf of this country? Why have they been the object of this delta, this taking away of income?
Madam Chair, I believe they called it double dipping. Because, yes, because...
Work 30 years, and then you got disabled, and you were disabled, that's called double dipping.
And I agree with you, but they're both coming, federal programs, they're both federal dollars, and they always called it double dipping, and there are measures being taken now to correct the inequities, combat-related special compensation, for veterans 50% service connected and over, but throughout the years your compensation for your service connected disability was offset by your military retirement income, and it was wrong, and
it's a disgrace.
It is,
and it should be corrected retroactively.
Yes, it should.
Representative Barnhart. Oh, excuse me.
Madam Chair, I was just going to explain one of the examples that we've used when we've talked about this is if you have a service member who is, for whatever reason, discharged and has a service connected disability, regardless of the amount of time that they served. For example, they served their 3 or 4 year commitment. They were rated at a 80% disability. They would receive that full 80% from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs for that disability. However, standing alongside that young service member, if you have a retired service member who served for 20 years, 30 years, and received that same 80% disability, it would be offset by their retirement.
It's unconscionable.
Can I would follow up on that just so.
Oh, yes, sir. Okay. Representative Boquist.
You asked, what is the problem? And I'm in my 30th year, which means I'm in my 15th congressional session. And there has not been a session of the last 15 congressional sessions when the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, or some other entity has had introduced into the U.S. Congress through 15 sessions a bill to fix this problem, and it has never passed.
Well, I think it's one more reason why we need to put this bus caravan together from all 48 states and head to Washington. I mean, if it takes the states getting it done, well, I don't know how a bus, I guess we could ferry a bus from Alaska and Hawaii. But, and to Washington, I just cannot comprehend how we could do this to these men and women who have suffered so much on our behalf. And
I agree.
Representative Barnhart.
I just was going to inquire how far down you've drilled into these numbers to figure out what the basis for the differences are. I mean, it occurs to me as I'm looking at them that there's several different ways you can view them, and I don't know which is the right way or whether all of them are. One way you could look at them is that the states at the higher end have done a better job of actually figuring out who is entitled to benefits and making sure they get them. And then states at the lower end. Another way you could look at it is that migration patterns in the United States are such that people tend to move around, and we end up with more people who are disabled veterans, even though they may come from everywhere, than other states do. Because of the patterns of our military recruiting and service from the various states. So Oklahoma may indeed have more people who are disabled veterans than anybody else does. or with more serious injuries. Do you have any idea what the bases are for the differences among the states, whether any of these ideas apply or not?
Representative Barnhart, I'm really not sure. My feeling would be service delivery. I know in Oklahoma, they probably provide more outreach than a lot of other states do.
Thank you.
Other than that, I really can't explain. I can't explain why Illinois, which is, they have a very large veteran population there. I can't explain why their average is only $650 a month. I don't know what kind of system they have set up in that state, whether they have somebody in each county to assist veterans, or maybe they just have one agency in Chicago. I don't know. I don't know how they're set up.
Val, would this include Medicaid dollars?
No, Madam Chair, not at all. No. This is only compensation and pension from the VA.
But so it doesn't include any health funding?
No. This does not have a medical funding breakout on it.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Farr.
Val, out of that $900, which is the income ceiling requirement, is it possible that some of the states that have a lower payout, are they allowing a higher amount for income?
Representative Farr, no, it is standard throughout the country.
So it's a U.S. requirement?
Yes.
But obviously, because Illinois, we know that they have a high number, because of Chicago, number of people receiving Medicaid. I think that what you said makes sense, that they're just not identifying the veterans, and there are probably a lot of veterans that are receiving Medicaid dollars that could actually be receiving veteran benefit.
That may be the case. I don't know.
If I could hitchhike on that point. For example, if they are in veterans' homes where the cost of being in a home is automatically taken out of their pension, I wonder if that would be here.
These are just compensation and pension dollars that are paid to the veteran. There are no added dollars in here.
It's something to investigate.
You know, Illinois has such a large veteran population that this number really makes no sense to me. None at all.
Any other questions? Want to continue, please? The next page.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next page is a spreadsheet that I prepared, again, based on U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs numbers. The first ranking, the counties are being ranked by population in that county. And then the third column shows their ranking as far as compensation and pension dollars per capita per county. So as you can see, Multnomah County, which is the largest county in Oregon, has 58,481 veterans, but they're ranked 24th in the state. Their average comp and pension dollars per veteran in their county is $1,139. And then the next one is Washington County, which is the second largest county in the state, and they are ranked 34th out of 34 with $812 per veteran in that county.
Representative Hunt, do you want to say something in behalf of your county?
Well, since we have on this committee represented the three lowest counties on this ranking, Yamhill, Washington, and Clackamas. Actually, we don't have Jefferson represented, I guess, on this committee. I mean, do you have, again, getting back to the drilling down into the numbers, do you have a sense of why for neighboring counties there would be such a huge inequity? Because we're looking at per capita numbers here, it seems like at least the gap should not be so significant. And any idea of why there would be such a significant gap between counties that are similar in size, similar in level of development, similar in so many areas, and yet...
Well, Representative Hunt, Washington and Clackamas are very similar. there's not too much gap there. Multnomah County, they have a three-quarter time county veteran service officer in that county. When they had three people working out of that office, claims were rolling in hand over fist. I mean, they were really coming in. But now that they've been down to just a three-quarter time person, that person doesn't even have time to do new claims. That person, I think, basically just takes care of the existing pending claims that he has going.
If I could follow, Madam Chair, yes. So do you think, conversely, the fact that Marion County has a comparatively pretty high number, mm-hmm. Is that due to the fact that there's more adequate staffing in terms of veteran service officers out of the department?
Well, we have a presence here in Marion and Polk counties, and I think veterans are more aware here in this core of what's available to them. They are aware that there is help for veterans issues here. And I don't know that that's true in other counties throughout the state.
So this per capita, with Coos Bay being number one, I'm looking, number two is Douglas County, three, Klamath, four, Tillamook, and who's the fifth? We're five.
Lincoln.
Does that speak to the number of county service officers available?
Madam Chair, I think those counties over on the coast, I think because there's a lot of retirees.
Oh, it's the retirees.
In that area, yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Madam Chair, those are also among the counties that have the lowest growth in the economy in over the last 15 years or so.
And the highest unemployment
rates. And the highest unemployment rates until you get to far eastern Oregon.
Hey, any other questions to the next page, please?
I just want to see if you can wrap. Yeah, I got this already.
Representative
Bruin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was going to be my question before it was answered. Was could it be just the compensation of where military retirees retire?
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, I believe they do have a larger concentration of military retirees on the coast. Yes.
But first, we need to be careful because all of these have denominators. And so we're not talking about just military retirees. We're talking about military retirees with disabilities. As a percentage of the total number of military retirees must be higher in these states with higher numbers.
Representative Barner, I do agree. However, I believe if you spent 20 years in the military, that chances are very high that you're going to come out of it with a service-connected disability.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay,
Bocas. I'm not to my 18th month mark here representing, so you're safe there. But I think her statement is true. And one of the challenges you face, though, is the double dipping issue that we're talking about. And that is I mean, most after you've drilled for 20 or 25 or 30 years into the soldier's mind, and they know if they go out and get a disability, that you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, and so therefore they don't do it. They just most veterans, I would tell you, look at it as if you're robbing Peter to pay Paul, why am I going to put up with the bureaucracy and all the rest of this stuff to go do it? Until such point that their personal economic situation or the disability gets so great where it's like we're out of options now. And, you know, the way to get ahead of the curve, go right back to where we're at, is to reach out to those veterans through those counties and get them back into the process and start going forward. Because, you know, we may, in fact, fix the double dipping. Because I think if there's any session of Congress, it's going to be this one that we fix the double dipping on. Because the public outcry has never been such great since the Korean War. And so, but I think that is a real key issue right there. A lot of people have disabilities and benefits and so on and so forth. But if you're going to get hammered on the double dipping, why would you go through the paperwork? Why would you shuttle back and forth to Portland or every place else when you're not going to, or Salem when you're not going to get anywhere?
That's true.
And that's a psychological thing that, you know, we have to get over.
I think Representative Boquist, one of the reasons why you would is so you could get the collateral benefits, you know, the property tax exemption or the free hunting and fishing license, things like that.
But my point is that, and I fully agree with you about it, I mean, the point is they don't know. I mean, most veterans don't know that those benefits exist out there.
Which we are going to take care of, right? All right,
absolutely.
to the map.
Okay, the map just gives you a picture.
I don't know what we're looking at.
This is the map.
Not blue and red, it's green and red.
It is green and red. This one shows that the national average comp and pension per veteran throughout the country is $1,103. The red states are those states whose average is below $1,103 per veteran, and the green states are those who are above the national average. And I just find it odd that all these red states are kind of connected.
Well, I certainly do with California, I would think.
Yes.
We had a lot of retirees. Okay, moving on to the next one.
The next chart just shows veteran population. This is a comparison of 2003 and 2004, the veteran populations for each state during those 2 years, and the percentage of change, and then also compensation and pension dollars for 2003, 2004, how much those dollars increased per state. And the change in the average for those years and the percentage of the change.
So our per capita compensation and pension in Oregon went up, if I can read this here, $219 per
Correct, Madam Chair.
Veteran. Between 3 and 4,
between,
03 and 04.
Between 03 and 04. That was a 22% increase, which is a higher increase, I believe, than any other state in the country, between 03 and 04.
But this shows that we lost 5,000.
Correct. Our veteran population did go down during this time period.
As it did everywhere else.
Well, they're aging.
Wow.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are always some different veterans numbers that are out there, too. With the veteran population that they're using for the 03 would be the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs veteran population estimate adjusted to the 2000 census. So, you know, just so that as you're working with veterans benefits or those issues, you realize that you will hear different numbers from time to time. What we rely on are the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs numbers.
Correct, and I might also add that at the rate we're losing World War II veterans, and we do have a large number of them in the state of Oregon, that mm-hmm. is part of the reduction as well.
Mm-hmm. Do we have that classification? Could we possibly get it? How many veterans we have from these different wars?
Madam Chair, yes, we could. We can get that from the U.S. Department
like
of Veterans Affairs. Okay.
If it's all possible. Any questions on this? Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next spreadsheet that you see is basically the same as the previous one, but this is based on Oregon counties, the changes in the vet population per each county, and the changes in the compensation and pension dollars from 03 to 04, and then the percentage of the average increase.
This will be worth a study here.
Well, if you look at Gilliam County, and how much their per capita compensation and pension dollars changed from 03 to 04. It's amazing, and I have no idea why or how that number increased so much. That was 101% increase.
Why would Douglas County have a 557% change?
Madam Chair, I don't know. I know they had a huge increase in new claims.
That would be one to have the county service officer coming. Do they have a county service officer?
Madam Chair, yes, they do. Mary Newman is the county veteran service officer for Douglas County.
Ask her to come explain Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Bowman.
Yeah, if you go back to the second page, it's the same thing. Douglas is one of the largest dollar value ranks. It looks like that veteran service officer cracked the code.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, look at it.
Okay, let's get her in here and find out what she did. Let's get those veterans their rightful dollars here. Okay, any questions further? Okay, thank you so much for this excellent report. Appreciate it. Any other questions of Ms. Brown or Ms. Conley? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Very interesting.
We're honored today to have individuals who traveled a really long way to get here today. And I'm really pleased to call David Looper from our Oregon Veterans Home in the Dalles and whomever else he'd like to come with him. I think you should bring him. Just put your money right up on that.
We're not going to
need
any acronyms.
No acronyms? Let's see. All right. I need some help from the committee this time.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Van Moore. I'm with West Care Management Incorporated, and we manage the Oregon Veterans Home under the guidance of the Veterans Care Centers of Oregon, and I am here simply to provide support and a resource for Mr. Looper, who you've asked to give testimony today.
Thank you.
My name is David Looper. I'm the administrator of the Oregon Veterans Home, and I basically would like to talk to the committee regarding the mill bill. The legislation that I think it's kind of the way it's written is kind of unfair. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Veterans Health Care and Benefit Act, it's a federal law that was implemented in November 30th of 1999, and it has to do with service-connected veterans who are service-connected, have a service-connected disability of 70% or more. The federal VA is required to provide three levels of, they're required to have, provide nursing home care either through a nursing home of their own, through a contracted nursing home, or a state, veterans home. I feel that in the Dalles, I'm gonna back up here. The state veterans homes were created after in the late 1800s for Civil War veterans, and have been around for over 100 years. Basically, what we're facing at the Oregon Veterans Home is that we're turning away veterans who have service-connected disabilities that we shouldn't be turning away. What I've learned in the year and a half that I've been the administrator of the Veterans Home is that you have a camaraderie of veterans organizations, veterans themselves. You have probably 95% of you have a male population in the nursing home as opposed to a female that you see. And I've been administrator for over 30 years. And in most nursing homes, you see a female population. You don't see a male population. And so we've created this environment in the state home, but we have to turn away people that are service-connected 75% or more, which seems that's why we built the home. It's for these service-connected veterans, disabled veterans, and we're in an area in the Dalles, which is very rural. Covers I hate for my admission nurse to turn away a millbiller, they're called millbillers, a veteran who has a service-connected disability of 70% or more. We're turning away, you have to go to the Portland VA Medical Center for your care, or to Vancouver for your care, or to a contract. The only facility in the Dalles that has a contract with the veterans, the federal VA, is Evergreen the Dalles, which I feel is a very inferior. I used to oversee that as the regional manager. It was inferior 7 years ago, it's inferior now. To state-run nursing home. And what I'm saying is when somebody comes and they're a service-connected veteran, they're required to pay us their pension. But if they go to a nursing home like Evergreen the Dalles, they don't have to give up their pension. And one of our goals at this building is to keep our rates as low as we can for veterans. We're providing care at $104 a day. Part of this legislation is that the federal government will give two grants. They'll provide a grant for 65% of the cost. And you have to find a community that gives the other 35%. The second grant that they give is they give a grant that provides a per day premium or per diem to the state home. There's another law by the federal VA that in no case shall the payments be made to respective any veteran exceed one half of the cost of the veteran's care in such a home, a state home. So the federal government will not pay more than half of their care. Right now we're getting on the second grant $59.36 per day per veteran as the per diem. I often wondered when I went to the Dalles why this community, why was the state veterans home built in the Dalles? Well, it was built in the Dalles because they came up with the other 35%.
Right. And it is awesome. I just want to thank you for my research.
I think it's pretty awesome. It's the nicest building I've been in 30 years.
I compliment you. It's a beautiful, excellent home. And I told Director Willis this week the only complaint that I heard when I was there was one of your clients needed a Marine hat.
And we got a Marine
all
hat.
Right. That's pretty good. There's
in,
no
in Washington D.C.
It wasn't the food. It wasn't the staff. It was our cleanliness, our the view, our extracurricular activities, which you usually hear at other nursing homes. It was just one individual wanted a hat for her husband, I believe.
Mrs. Gray, that you're referring to on the Marine hat, she wondered why the Marine hat wasn't white. I told her I was sorry. You know, it was black. But it did say Marines on it.
But it is a wonderful place. So let me just catch up with what you said so far. This Millennium Bill is a federal bill offered to across the nation, right?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, for all veterans.
Right.
But in order to access the benefits, you must go to one of three federally dictated locations?
Madam Chair, that there are certain locations in each community. What to access that benefit, you must go to a nursing home that has a federal veterans contract for providing services, a community-based nursing home. The issue here is that because of the grants that have been given in the form of the construction grant, and because of the per diem grant that is given to the State Department of Veterans Affairs for each patient in there, the federal government has declined specifically within the Millennium Bill to allow a state-operated veterans home to have a grant or have a contract. And what it does is put the veteran in the position of saying, okay, and we'll take, because it's so near and dear to our hearts, we'll take the situation in the Dalles. They have their choice of going to this Evergreen facility in the Dalles and getting to keep all of their pension, all of their benefits, everything, and the federal government paying 100% of their care. Or being able to then use their pension and stuff and resources for their spouse or their family. Or they can go to the Oregon Veterans Home and use that income then to pay for whatever portion of the $104.50 a day that it costs for the resident. And they function then in the same manner as any other patient. In effect, they give up all of their income to stay in the veterans home. And I think that's the issue Mr. Looper is addressing, is saying that it's choice. There's a choice issue here. We can understand the federal government's position on this, but...
I can't understand it. So let me ask you, is the Evergreen facility at 100% occupancy?
No, it is not.
Not even close.
No. Their position theoretically on this is that we paid already. I heard the term in the previous testimony being used of double dipping. I think they're probably viewing this as a double dipping, saying, gee, we've already subsidized the home via construction. We subsidize it via this $59.36 per diem grant. Why should we additionally subsidize it by having the veteran in there and then paying this $104.50 again, this additional money, when they're getting the their pension and stuff? No, we've got a contract home. And I think that's in essence what Mr. Looper's talking about, is resident choice.
Representative Barnhart.
So the operative issue as to whether it is a contract nursing home. I think that's what CNH stands for, contract nursing home.
Right.
The difference is that one is privately operated and the other one is operated by the state of Oregon?
It's a state-operated veterans home.
Okay.
Whether it be in Oregon or Tennessee.
Couldn't we repair this problem simply by setting up a private nonprofit to operate the state nursing home?
There is a private nonprofit corporation operating the nursing home. It's entitled Veterans Care Centers of Oregon. We actually have one of our board members present with us today in the gallery. And that's the structure. But the license, by the nature of it being a state-operated veterans home, the license is actually carried by the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, as is the Medicare and Medicaid contract, and it has to be that way for a number of issues. And because of that, and because the grant money was given to the home for construction, that is what is being construed by the federal government in the catch-all phrase is double dipping. And it would require, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, it would require a fix on the federal level to simply say, gee, it's resident choice, they ought to be able to make a choice to go to this Oregon Veterans Home without being unduly penalized by losing their pension. If they don't lose their pension going to Evergreen in the Dalles, why should they lose their pension going to the other facility when, in essence, it would actually cost the federal government less to put them in the Oregon Veterans Home, because Evergreen in the Dalles pays more than $104.50 for the private pay portion. I mean, they would probably be getting, I'm guessing, their veterans contract is well in excess of $150 or $160 there. It would make good sense, and that's not different than the way you would find it in any state in the United States with a state-operated veterans home. It is a an issue of resident choice to be able to reside with their comrades in arms.
And if anybody should ever have a choice, the freedom of choice, it should be a veteran. I'm going to ask Starl to come up here and join you, because I know that he is a former head of the board of the Veterans Care Center, I believe. And just thank you for your being here. And would you just identify yourself?
Yes, Madam Chairman. I'm the. My name is Starl Austin. I live in Salem. I'm a former director of the State Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm a current member of the advisory committee at the State Department of Veterans Affairs, and I serve on the board of Veterans Care Centers of Oregon. I'm also a World War II fighter pilot, a retired military pilot who takes a reduction because I have a 10% hearing disability. So, and I guess I fit a lot of categories you're talking about today.
Thank you, Mr. Austin, for your service to our country.
Thank you.
And thank you for being
here. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you. What step do you think we ought to take to cure this issue that we don't even give our veterans a choice? We don't give them a choice. We send them to war. We don't give them a choice there. You think we'd at least give them a choice of how to, you know, live out their lives in at a choice of residence.
Defeat the Millennium Bill.
And have any, in the past, as you were the head of the Department of VA, have any of the members of our federal delegation, Gordon Smith, Wyden, Alcoin, Packwood, Hatfield, none of them ever taken this on?
They've all been very supportive, but I don't think it was an issue at that time. This is a new bill, I believe, is it not? That's not passed yet, the Millennium Bill?
Yes, it is. No.
This is not passed yet. This is something that Congress is now considering. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do is see that it doesn't
pass.
It
is passed as of 99.
Yeah, I believe it was passed.
Was it passed in 99?
Yeah,
I'm
it
sorry.
Was passed. Okay. It would need a correction to the bill.
Okay, so we need to find out who sponsored this bill. And
during my term as director, I had support from every member of the Oregon Congressional Delegation. In fact, Senator Hatfield at that time was chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, and Bob Packwood was chairman of the Senate Finance Committee. Hatfield was the chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee.
Oh, my goodness.
And
the best of
unfortunately, a man named Dan Rostenkowski was chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee. And some people will recognize that name.
Yes, we'll stop there. Unfortunately. Who, Representative Farr?
What is your rank?
I retired as a Brigadier General.
And did you work at the Oregon Military Department?
I was there 23 years, yes.
You worked there with my father, CW4 Robert Smith.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Actually, I worked there, too, during the summers, and I thought I recognized
you. Yes.
But I asked our administrator if you were a general.
I was the Deputy Adjutant General, Assistant Adjutant General Air. I had three titles at different times, all the same job. And I was there in that capacity for 17 years.
Okay, well, I want to correct myself, General Austin, and say thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Other questions regarding this Millennium Bill? How many residents do you have at the Oregon Veterans Home compared to how many they have, for example, in your location at this Evergreen Home?
The Evergreen Home, I believe, is 72 beds, and it has 38 residents in it. It is the only facility that has a VA contract in Wasco County that I know of. I might also add that when I was out working for private industries and so forth, and we'd have the federal VA do an inspection of a building. It took a day, maybe a day and a half, one person, maybe two people. The state home up in the Dalles, we have approximately 10 people spending almost a week at the building. So in this building, you have, not only do you have your state and your federal inspection, you also have the federal VA coming in and doing another inspection, like 2 months later. And it's a lot more thorough than what I was accustomed to for 28 years. And
Oregon Veterans Home, how many beds do we have?
We have 151 beds, and we currently have, Madam Chair, we currently have 132 residents.
So the only federal contracts, there's a home in Portland and a home in the Dalles. These are federal.
There's the only federal home that I'm aware of is in Vancouver, Washington.
Oh, not Portland.
It's not in Portland. There's a VA medical center,
right.
A federal VA medical center in Portland, but I'm not aware of any home. No.
Well, it does seem strange. I want to ask you, I've been very distraught in our last session. You know, we were greatly concerned about the home. Unfortunately, we didn't have a Veterans Committee and dedicated legislators and a governor concerned enough in the last legislature. And we were greatly remiss. Here we have this home. We have a county that worked to fund it, to bring it here. And then we provide $0 for maintenance. I cannot imagine. And when I was there, if you'll just pardon my taking this time to explain to the committee, I understood that washing machines, for example, that are in this home came out of actual ships. And, I mean, to repair one is a costly activity. So how much money should the state have been appropriating for the maintenance of this home for these veterans?
I think... Madam Chair, I feel that maintenance, whether it be a state veterans home or another, it's up to the administrator to see that it's like a Fram oil filter. You can pay me now or pay me later. And where a lot of people deferred maintenance is a term that I don't believe in deferred maintenance on my home, and I don't believe in deferred maintenance at where I work. And I will say that the question on the washing machines, these are actually washing machines that are very similar to washing machines. They weren't taken out of ships and put in the building. They are duplicate machines of what's put on ships. I haven't seen in a nursing home this type of washing machine until I went to the Dalles, to the Oregon Veterans Home, and I went, what is that? You know, but not my choice, but you know, they're 7 years old, and they are costly to repair. I think that a lot of the vendors that we have to pull out from Portland to repair. The repair on these washing machines may not be that's a small thing when you think of an 85,000 square foot building. That's a small deal, and right now they're working, so I'm a happy guy.
Is it $50,000 a year, or $100,000 a year, or what number that would maintain this home in an adequate?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Van Moore again for the record. That is a hard thing to get a hold of, to put a dollar number on it. I can tell you on the washing machines right now, we're looking at maintenance costs that could be $50,000 or $60,000 for potential repairs over the next few years versus replacing the machines for less, probably half of that, somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000 to replace machines with commercial Milners, Unimax, a variety of different machines that are more user-friendly, shall we say, than these other machines. I think that if the committee is interested in that number, the best source for that number, tracking the maintenance, building maintenance, would probably be the plant services, the acting manager, Mr. Ted Johnson, through Paula and Brown and Jim Willis, could probably get you those numbers of exactly what they have spent over the interview the last 6 or 7 years and what their projected replacements are. As we all know, roofs have to be replaced. It's a 75,000 square foot building. That's a lot of roof. You know, there is a lot of maintenance issues with a building that size that we don't want to be deferred. And I'm sure that that the department would be more than happy to come up with some fairly educated projections of what that number would be.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, I've been thinking a little bit about the differences in the rates between your facility and the private facilities. And I'm wondering if a part of that isn't that they're needing to collect not only the operating costs, but also either debt service or at least a return on their investment in the building. And maintenance, that's exactly the topic we've just been talking about, maintaining their building, as a part of the difference in the rates. And I'm wondering if it would be possible to calculate what the imputed amounts would be in your facility if you were trying to cover those same costs the way they do it, rather than having had the grant up front and looking for maintenance costs another source. And the reason I'm asking that, I think, is that this may be some evidence that we can use in the process of trying to get this inequity changed. Because the fact is that the federal government benefits from your lower rates in part because they've invested up front. And part of the reason why your rates are lower is because of that upfront investment. You're not asking to double dip, you're asking to single dip.
Right.
Because they've already been paid in the lower rates for their upfront investment.
Representative Barnhart and Madam Chairman, members of the committee, two things. One, Paula Brown just whispered in my ear, they have the number that you requested.
I was going to ask
she said it's $120,000 a year, $240,000 a biennium for maintenance. Once again, this was a $15 million building. And when you address the savings that we would have, that if we were paying debt service on that, you could run an amortization schedule at a reasonable commercial rate on $15 million, you would get that number. As far as the department being able to accrue reserves in the manner you're speaking, Representative Barnhart, there's a little bit of a problem in that the federal government on a state-operated nursing home has very tight restrictions that the State Department of Veterans Affairs in a given state cannot make any profit above and beyond their, quote, operating costs. And anything that they make, if it's positive there, they got to hand back at the end of the year to the federal government and pay back on the per diem grants they've been given. So, you know, we're working with some issues there to try to figure out if there is some way we can do that to deal. But there is no way that the department can actually get these excess revenues. They're limited to what they can charge to what the actual costs of operating are. So.
Follow up, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your smile indicates to me that you understand very well how the accounting system that they've chosen to use really is a double whammy.
It is.
They've told you you're not going to get fully reimbursed, and they've told you, and besides that, you're not going to be allowed to impute. And I'm not asking you to actually make a profit. I'm talking.
I understand.
I'm talking about imputing costs as an accounting for accounting purposes, you're not even going to be allowed to impute these costs in order to understand what the real value of federal investment earlier mm-hmm. was.
That is correct, Representative Barnum.
You're getting stuck on both sides of it, aren't you?
We are. I will tell you this, that the Chief Financial Officer, and I avoided the acronym, Mr. Bruce Schreiber from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and the Chief Financial Officer for West Care Management, Jason MacArthur, had been working diligently on looking if there is any way to work with this issue. But at present time, under federal law, we haven't been able to find anything, and I think that's the reason why the director of the department, Mr. Jim Willis, had put in a request for some building maintenance funds for the budget. And my understanding was that there was inadequate funding there to be able to grant that request. Well, and pardon me if I've spoken out of turn.
Well, no, I was just going to say, as long as I've been here, we haven't given you, I think we gave you $1 and you didn't even get it from the last session. You haven't been paid yet. It's a disgrace.
In fact,
if someone loaned me $1, I want to pay you right now. Could somebody just, and then we'll tell the...
You do understand, that, Madam Chair, that the bookkeeping functions of accounting for that is going to cost more than that dollar.
Well, I'd just like to say one time to contribute to this home beyond what's being done. So if you would, please, and oh, dear, this is on camera, so I'll probably get in trouble.
The record should know that it's actually a donation from Representative Boquist.
Yeah. And could I have those two names again? Bruce Shriver is?
He is the Chief Financial Officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs.
Okay, and the other one?
Mr. Jason MacArthur, the Chief Financial Officer for West Care Management Incorporated.
Okay, thank you. If we could move to another subject that is distressing me greatly. While I was at the Oregon home, I heard an issue that has plagued this committee as long as we've been in existence, in that we try to sort out the why of it. And it is that two of our veterans were removed or had to leave the home because of some discrepancy in this Medicaid versus veteran health benefits program. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, the only veteran that I know that has left the building is a veteran who has been under this Millennium Bill, where we've said for you to keep your VA pension or military pension, you're going to have to go to a contracted nursing home or a veterans home. And you know, I've never had to do that in 30 years, and it really did distress me that we had to do that.
Well, probably distressed him.
Yeah, probably did. Well, it's a matter, Madam Chair. It's a matter of what's economically best for you as a person, and that was for him to keep his pension.
He had to leave the place. That,
and then he could go to a contracted nursing home, and they would, the federal VA would pay for all of his care.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, there is one other situation that there is a potential for conflict, and I cannot address whether it's ever occurred or not. But the requirements of Medicaid, and we do have Medicaid certification at the home now, and we care for 50 residents that we would not be able to care for otherwise had we not received Medicaid certification from the state. With Medicaid certification, they have certain criteria that a caseworker reviews their acuity, if you will. Their needs for assistance with activities of daily living and their clinical needs. And they have to be at a certain level to be able to get Medicaid on the Medicaid rolls, Medicaid assistance for skilled nursing home care. It is possible that a person might be able to qualify for care in a state veterans home under veteran criteria, but there might be not qualify under the Medicaid criteria for a state-operated veterans home or for a skilled nursing home at all. In the private sector, the alternative to to that if they did not quite qualify for a skilled nursing home would be to refer them to an assisted living environment and public assistance in an assisted living environment. Unfortunately, in the state of Oregon, we have no assisted living for veterans. That would be called domiciliary care in the vernacular for the veterans. And who knows, that may be in our future someday. So.
Do we need them now?
If you're asking me if there's a need, Madam Chairman, I cannot imagine there is not a need. I don't have any accurate statistics of what that demand would be, but I can't imagine that there would not be a need.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Do you want to conclude, Mr. Looper? We're so grateful you're here and continue. I think we'll have to get our plan together, plan our work and work our plan and see what we can do with this Millennium Bill.
I think that the things that need to be considered is the, again, the environment that the veterans that we've created up there, that veterans do have a choice where they go. We are in a rural setting. We're one of the largest employers in this community, and that we should be able to negotiate a contract just like any other nursing home. Whether that, whatever that dollar amount is, we're gonna be able to negotiate, and that's what I feel is necessary.
Yes, Representative Farr.
I just thought of a question because you mentioned that the veteran would have to relinquish all of his veteran benefits in payment for the facility for him to stay in the veteran's home. Is that 100% of his pension?
It could be. Yes, it could be.
So there's no portion of it that would be left out as a stipend to pay for incidental expenses that he might have?
If the veteran, Representative Farr, if Madam Chair, if they are on Medicaid, it depends on the program that they're on. Let's say that the veteran gets a pension of $600, and they would probably qualify under for Medicaid assistance. They would only get $30 a month for all incidentals, and that's where the family comes in and supplements. Supplements their they may be a smoker. They may, you know, pack of cigarettes is $5. You know, in answer to your question,
would we have veterans living like that?
What?
$600 pension, and it, of course, I understand how that would take it for living, and has $30 left to do anything with for a month?
We do have that. Yes, yes, we do.
Yes.
Because clearly there are instances where there's no family to come forward to make up the difference in what it takes for them to have what they need for incidental expenses.
Representative Farr, Madam Chairman, that's why that we have the activity budget that we have, that where we will supplement sometimes a veteran's cigarette smoking, whatever activities they have. I've never in my life seen the activity budget that we have, the dollars per month. It's $2,500 a month, and we may spend $120 on a veteran in a month.
Madam Chair and Representative Farr, to add to that, something that the Oregon Veterans Home enjoys that I have never seen before in my 25-plus years in this business, is such an active volunteer organization. You have so many civic groups and veterans groups. They run a cantina there. Those funds, the profits from those funds are turned back to the use of the veterans to help them with these kind of things. Very active support from veterans groups to kind of mitigate that. But the question you bring up, Representative Farr, is true really for every Medicaid resident in the country. They're limited. It's between $30 and $35 personal funds per month, and for toothpaste, incidentals, cigarettes, et cetera. And it is a struggle, but I'm not sure that we're going to resolve that here today. So,
well, I'm so grateful that y'all provide such a terrific environment for our veterans. How could we have a survey of for the future? How many additional veterans do we feel we're going to need to serve in a home like this? I'd like, Yamhill County to be the next location. They'd be right there, General, by the Spruce Goose. They would love it with all those warbirds there, and we have good wine country, good fishing. Could we get some projection, or do you know how many other veterans are in other nursing homes across the state? Do we know? Do you have any idea?
I represent Nelson, members of the committee. I don't have any exact figures on that. We could probably get a barometer for that. I think that one of the, I think, to be circumspect and realistic in projecting that, you're going to have difficulty having a veteran from Klamath Falls want to live in Yamhill County, or the Dalles for that matter, because their wife, their family, they can't travel all that distance to visit them. It's much more reasonable for them to stay in a facility in Klamath Falls and have be close to their family and obtain services there. I think the wisdom that the chair has expressed about Yamhill County, anywhere in the Mid-Willamette Valley, I think if we look at future either skilled beds for veterans or assisted living expansion, it makes a lot of sense to have it near population centers. As you well know, we have struggled to build census there. We've been open 7.5 years and still have a significant number of empty beds, although we're in Black Ink for the first time in history, which I think David and his staff is to be applauded for. It is a difficult challenge, and in every state in the country where they have built a state-operated veterans facility in a remote location, they have had these struggles. And conversely, the state of Utah, by way of example, built a home in Salt Lake City near the Veterans Medical Center and was filled up in less than 60 days and has never had a census problem. And I think that Boise is another example of that, where you get them near population centers. I think reasonably looking in the future as we make that assessment, and I am sure that is in the strategic planning. I don't think there's any tactical plans for immediate construction, but looking to the future strategically, I'm sure those considerations are being made by the department, by the Veterans Advisory Committee. And while nobody can give you that answer today, I'm sure they will be able to in the future.
Our chief financial officer from Yamhill County is coming up, so I'm asking if he has enough money. How much did it cost?
Representative Nelson, if I could add, this same discussion took place yesterday at the quarterly meeting of the Advisory Committee at the department.
Oh, it did?
It did, yes, indeed.
And
we're in a complete agreement with the things that Van stole some of my thunder here, but we selected, or I wasn't there, but the Dalles was selected because of the donation of the land and the money from the support from Wasco County.
And how much was that? Do you know?
Well, 35%.
35 million?
35% of the total cost of the
But how much was it?
It was about $4.7 million, if I recall correctly.
They have a bond issue they're still paying for up there because of that. And the Oregon National Guard went up there and did all the site preparation and all that as a training exercise for the engineer battalion.
How great.
Remote is the key. We need, if we do another home, need to look at population and accessibility and those kind of things more than we look at donated land and donated money.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a very good point, General. And McMinnville's going to be part of Portland very soon. They tell us 750,000 people will be moving from, living in that corridor from Portland to our county. So that's something forward to look forward to.
So much for the wine.
That's right. Well, thank you so much. Do you have anything else to add today,
The only thing I do, Madam Chair, is thank you for the dollar. It will be framed, and I'm sure on David's wall in the and that way I don't have to run it through the books.
Could you just send a note though to the Department of Revenue here?
We will do that,
and let them know that that debt has been paid. Thank you so much for being here, and we're grateful for your service.
You.
We're grateful for all you do. Next, we want to give our Oregon Counties Association a chance to participate with us in our desires to better serve our veterans, and I'd like to ask you all to come forward at this time, please. And we have plenty of chairs we can spread out here. Welcome, Mr. Penhollow. We've been missing you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bill Penhollow. I'm with the Association of Oregon Counties, and we thank you for the opportunity to come before you today and talk a little bit about the County Veteran Services Program at the county level to give you a little flavor. I think you've had some information on this, but we wanted to provide you with some information, some flavor of what goes on at the county level as we serve our veterans and the challenge that we're facing as we have increasing numbers coming back from the current engagements. As you know, the Veteran Services Program is one of the one of many shared programs that counties provide in partnership with the state of Oregon and in partnership with the Oregon legislature. For county veteran services programs, counties are contributing a little over $1.5 million a year. Now, for biennium, then that's $3 million we're contributing. A ratio that's about $4 to $5 at the county level for every dollar that we receive in support from the state. That's a statewide average. Now that varies significantly across the state as the general fund resources of the varying counties vary very significantly. That's the situation today. However, we do have some concern that we'll be able to maintain that level of contribution because of something that I think all of you have heard about, Public Law 106-393 and a House joint memorial that you have passed here in the Oregon legislature that calls on Congress to extend the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act of 2000 through the fiscal year of 2016 and fund that program. Currently, Oregon counties are receiving about $230 million from that program, and we refer to it as the Federal Forest Safety Net. As many of you know, this is a federal general fund contribution to the states across the nation where the timber harvests on federal lands have diminished or not basically come to an end. And this funding program has enabled counties to provide additional resources to their general funds, to their road funds, and as you know, too, a portion of this goes to the county school funds. So we certainly appreciate your support in that, and we'll encourage you to talk with your colleagues in Washington, D.C. to see that we get this into the next budget and extended to hopefully 2016. The costs are increasing to grow, and if we have this kind of an impact in Oregon, it will create major displacement in this program as well as other programs funded by the general fund. Of the $230 million that comes to Oregon, better than half of that, something in the neighborhood of $120 million, goes into the county's general funds, And as you probably know, general funds of the counties then provide this additional support to the Veteran Services Program.
And Mr. Pinhall, how is that distributed per capita?
Madam Chair, no. That is actually based on the federal force across the state and basically on an acreage basis. So not all 36 counties, 31 of the counties receive revenues from this source for roads and schools, and 18 receive revenues from this source for general fund purposes.
How many for roads did you say?
31.
And then 18 for?
And 18 for general fund purposes.
Thank you.
A couple of those counties, Polk County is a good example, might challenge me when I say 31 because they get something in the neighborhood of $2,000 so out of the program. But 31 receive funds, and again, based upon the forest acreage and they used a base year for calculating the harvest that they used to receive, and then used that in the formula to distribute those funds.
Would it be possible, I'd like to ask Mr. Krosick if he'd identify himself, how much Campbell County gets?
Nick, Madam Chair, next year I'm projecting...
Would you identify yourself, please?
Oh, sorry, my apologies.
For the record.
For the record, John Krosick, I'm County Administrative Officer and Budget Officer for Yamhill County. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Yamhill County next year will receive approximately $700,000 in its general fund from what used to be called the Oregon and California, or ONC, Railroad dollars. We put about $120,000 in Title III, which is a program that has a limited number of activities that you can spend these monies on. We receive roughly $600,000 for the federal forest funds, of which 25% of that goes to the schools and the balance goes to the county road fund.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I need to apologize to you and the committee, too, and to my guests with me today for not introducing them earlier, but I do want to introduce them. And we're going to do a little bit of a musical chairs here so that we can bring another person to the table. But I will be here and available for questions if you have additional after you hear the testimony of those that have come with me. On my left, immediate left, is Ralph Wyatt, who is the County Administrative Officer in Linn County. And next to Ralph is his Veteran Services Officer, Pat Brillen. And on my right is Diana Salenti, who is the County Veteran Services Officer in Yamhill County, as you know, Madam Chair. And Mr. Krosick has already introduced himself as the County Administrator and Finance Officer for Yamhill County. And in the audience is Debbie Kincaid from Washington County, and I think she has appeared before you previously. Unless there are questions for me right now, Madam Chair, if you would allow, I would like to have Debbie come here and take my place.
Thank you. Before you leave, it's my understanding that the state only funds two-tenths of one county service veteran officer across the state. Is that correct? Have I understood correctly?
Currently, on the average, in
for 34 counties.
34 counties, with a couple of exceptions for the smaller counties, which I understand get less than the $10,000. There is $10,000 allocated to each of those counties. There are exceptions, and I think Ms. Kincaid has that information. Some of the smaller counties receive smaller amounts than that. But if you look at the cost of an FTE, $10,000 is half to a third. John?
Well, I would say if you're talking $10,000, yes. I would agree with the chair on that issue. It's probably a fifth of the position cost.
Madam Chair, if I may add to that, too. I think both Mr. Krosick and Mr. Wyatt will talk about not only the salary cost, but total personnel costs, and that is a factor that's driving our costs up. And
I think that would be helpful information for you, too.
Sure. Well, what I'm curious about is why the counties haven't stepped up to the plate and asked the state why that we have done such a dismal, crummy job of, you know, financing our county service veteran officers. We, with 370,000 veterans, and then you, if you just use four to a family, you know, that's over, that's 1,500,000 people who need services, and we're talking about, you know, 30 people besides our great Department of Veteran Affairs and our Veterans Associations. Why has the county, or have you, and I just haven't been on that committee? Because I'd have certainly fought for it if I'd have known.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and let me respond to your question and committee members. I think that we thank you for the House for creating a Veterans Affairs Committee, because we haven't had this in the past. Basically, our voice has been down in Ways and Means. And, you know, when we're talking about veteran services with reduced budget at the state level and budget cuts, and our the state share for veteran services is going down, they say, well, it's going down proportionately to what our general fund is doing. We have made that effort in Ways and Means, along with other very important shared programs that counties provide in partnership, again, with the state, many of them that benefit veterans, mental health programs, public health programs, hopefully not the community corrections as much as that helps out, helps them out as residents in their communities. But there are, you know, all of those programs, and I think all the committee members have seen our colored chart that shows the importance of counties working with the state and with the Oregon legislature.
So the state
in providing
simply,
these shared services.
The state just simply has been, just gives $10,000 measly dollars for how long have they been doing this?
Well, it's been in, it's been higher in the past, and I think Mr. Wyatt and Mr. Crossick can speak to that, what the percentage increase has been over the past 10 years.
I'm just saying, this is 40,000 clients. If there were just one, you know, per county, we're expecting one person funded at $10,000 to handle 40,000 clients. And it's just so ludicrous to me. Take a teacher teaching 40,000.
The program was, as I recall, established back in the mid-40s and has grown from that time. Now, it's almost as the state was funding at that level and have not increased that, and counties have had to come along and recognizing the problem. Because you know that at the county level, our budget committees are made up of the elected officials, but also an equal number of appointed officials. They are there in the community where the veterans service organizations and others interested have an opportunity to come and talk about the importance of those programs. And so, as Mr. Crossick and Mr. Wyatt can share with you, and your veteran services officers as well, they have been there asking the county to allocate their limited resources in the same kind of situation that we've tried to do here at the state level. We certainly appreciate having this committee and the advocates on this committee to see if there's something particularly faced with veterans returning from Afghanistan and Iraq, and helping us address that together, the state and counties address that need across the state.
Since our mental health and programs like that have a direct funding from predominantly another source, is there any reason why these county service officers do not function in, I call it, satellite bases outside of the Department of Veterans Affairs as a part of that entity, but in the counties? I mean, is there a reason that wouldn't work?
Let me turn to one of my colleagues here and see if Ralph would like to comment on that.
Madam Chair, in answer to that, basically...
Identify yourself, please.
Oh, okay. I'm Ralph Wyatt. For the record, I'm Ralph Wyatt. I'm the Linn County Administrative Officer.
Thank you. Welcome.
I basically, and Pat could probably clarify this more, but those the health services are resources that they use to refer people to. Now, I'm not sure, based on your question, whether you how would you place them?
I'm sorry for not being clear, but I'm what I'm wondering is, it, you know, since these county, we shouldn't call them county service officers. We've got Diane Salenti helped us term the VetNet. They should be the manager of the VetNet services in, just happen to be located by county. I think be located by district, legislative district, if that should be the desire of the Department of Veterans Affairs. But I'm just wondering, is there a reason, if we do, and our plan is to fully fund these positions, these critical positions, they would become employees of the state fully. Is that a problem?
You would probably have to ask the employees themselves, but from our point of view, I think there's some issues. If you look at the chart that I think you have, I would say, based on what's happened over the past 10 years, if they were state employees, they might have been laid off in the last 10 years.
Yeah.
And if you look at the chart, it's pretty obvious that Linn County stepped up and, based on the importance of the function, funded those positions. As a matter of fact, the 95-96 chart. At that point in time, we had 1.5 employees in veteran service. We had one veteran services officer and a part-time clerical. What happened over time is that changed to 2 full-time employees, a veteran services officer, and an assistant veteran services officer who also does property management for the county. That basically allows more services, and the county, based on the importance of the function, stepped up and funded it. As you can see from the chart, the funding from the state was basically level. It's gone up and down a few thousand, $1,000 or so. Over that period of time, basically it was 12,500 was the operative number, but it's been a little bit above, a little bit below that over time. But I think it functions, in my own observation, and again, I'm a county employee, not a state employee, it functions over time better because the county officials, the elected commissioners, are closer to the community. People walk in the door and sit down and talk to them every day of the week and talk about veterans' issues. And that connection, I think, is very important.
Thank you. So, Mr. Krosik, if we're successful in funding, you know, at $50,000, for example, for our county service veteran officer, how could the state be certain that you wouldn't take that money and put it in dog control?
Madam Chair, we would not put it in dog control because dog control is fee-funded. So that particular example wouldn't be the case. Let me share with you some statistics that I have here with respect to the veteran service officer. This, and first, I want to emphasize to the committee, this is a growing program. When I came to Yamhill County in 1984, we had basically a three-day-a-week veteran service officer who spent the other 2 days a week working for the Board of Commissioners. At this point in time, I think the chart that you had said that now we have a veteran service officer and a part-time clerical assistant. In addition to that, Diane has recruited 2 work-study students, and she'll talk a little bit more about that when her turn comes up to help out. In fiscal year 2000, Yamhill County received $12,263 from the state for veteran services. We put in at that time $12,538. It was roughly between our general fund dollars, and when I use the term general fund dollars, read property taxes, because that's where about 90% of that comes from. It was roughly a 50-50 match. State was putting in half the funds, county was putting in half the funds. At this point in time, the county is putting in $45,113. That's an increase of 268%. And the split between the state and the county is 18% state, 82% county. So I think that perhaps addresses the concern about the county's commitment to this particular program. We expect in the future it's going to continue to grow. We obviously have the war going on in Iraq. We're going to have people coming in to see Diane with claims from that conflict.
So how can we be sure that that money would stay specifically directed to this service officer?
Well, one thing I'd like to see would be some relief for some of the money we've had to put in the past.
Okay, Mr. Krosnick. I should have known he's excellent at his job. Representative Hunt.
I think the chair raises the operative question really for all of us. I think there's unanimity up here about the need and the desire to invest more in the county veteran service offices. However, at least I, and I think probably all of us, are looking for a much greater level of assurance that if we invest $5 million or $2 million or whatever it may be, looking at all the offices, that not $1 would be backfilled into other programs.
Right.
And so I guess whether it's today or at some point in the future, at least for me, my comfort level of passing those new dollars is going to be really low unless we have that kind of commitment from all of you.
Madam Chair, yes. Representative Hunt, basically, again, if you look at the chart from our perspective, the county has been supplanting state dollars for at least 10 years. For Linn County, right now, our total budget of about $18 million, which $6 million is OTIA money, so it's not really any kind of money you can use. That's $6 million less than it was 2 years ago. We have 60 less employees than we had 2 years ago. You know, literally the general fund is under tremendous pressure. I would be very happy to go back to the percentage of county funding of 10 years ago rather than talking about not $1 going the other direction, because over this period of time, state funding has gone up 22%, county funding has gone up 217%. You know, I would be very happy to talk about a floor or a percentage, but when you say not $1 going the other direction after we've basically changed, we've doubled the general fund money that's gone into this program over that period of time. You know, I understand where you're coming from because you want to direct those dollars, but essentially what we're talking about is pressure at our level with general fund and keeping a whole spectrum of services going. This, I can assure you, we feel is very, very important service. And we're going to continue it. And quite frankly, if the state money went to zero, we would work very, very hard to continue the service at least the same level it's going right now. We'd like to expand it. The population's going up, but I would say let's share the expansion. Let's not just say, okay, you know, you got it to a certain level and we recognize that because we pull back our support. Oh, by the way, we expect you to continue at the same level based on, you know, that you got to because we pulled it back. Because that's what's happened.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you.
Excuse me. I get a little.
That's all right.
Well, I understand.
I'm just worried about us running out of time.
Part of my district is in Linn County, and part of it is in Lane County, and I know that both counties are in many ways in essentially the same boat in having huge call for county funds and a difficulty raising additional money. The question I've got really is, do you anticipate, and I think you've partly answered this already, is there a need now for a larger program that you simply can't afford? Is there a need for a growth in the program that you're concerned about being able to afford in the future? And that's a variation, I guess, in a sense, on Representative Hunt's question.
Actually, I think Pat could probably give you a better answer than I could. But she's in the network and talking every single day.
Pat, will you identify yourself, please?
Madam and the committee, my name is Pat Brillen, and I'm Linn County Veterans Service Officer. Presently, well, actually, for about the last few years, we have been consistently running about 1,500 to 2,000 active files, and there's only two of us. And now, by active file, I mean ones that we have filed a claim on, and now we have to keep things going for the veteran until they receive their benefits. We increased our workload by 600 veterans for the last 2 years. So, you know, with the new war going on, we are now getting more increase in that. So I definitely feel that in the very near future, we definitely would need some help in there. We have a work study that comes in for 2 days a week, and we generally keep them quite busy doing filing and things that we can allow him to do.
Thank you. And I think this goes back to the administrator, because it's really a budget question. You've had quite a rate of growth based on your chart here over the last several biennia. Do you think you can maintain that rate of growth given the county budget? I think I know the answer, but I'd like you to give it.
Well, I'm retired from the Air Force, and I would liken what's happening to us to flying up a box canyon. And the conclusion is fairly obvious, but we're going to keep flying. What we did and what you see on this chart reflects a couple of things. It reflects going from 1.5 positions to 2 positions. It reflects going from a clerical to an assistant veteran services officer, property manager, and it reflects health insurance and PERS.
Thank you.
Representative Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is more for the association of counties than anything else, because, you know, if you're going up the Fox Canyon, as your analogy is, this day, even at my lowly level, you're still moving 220 knots. So the actions of this committee are going to start happening pretty quick here in the next 4 to 6 weeks. And in order to come to a conclusion at a future date of county, what we're going to do with county veteran service officers, and I remind the committees, there's, and I don't even know what the bill number is, but there's a bill out there that tags $5 million, whole comes out there. We need to know definitively by county exactly how many veteran services officers are out there in each county and how much money is being spent on it. Because you've heard here in the discussion, you've heard, well, do you supplement the county? Do you make them state? So on and so forth. We've got to be able to compare apples and oranges so that we have something in front of us when we make the decision that is going to be advantageous to the chart, the colored chart that the counties like, which is help us, we can do the best job. I concur with that, and I'm the most avid supporter of that sitting probably here, as many of your association members will attest. Yes. But we're going to have some at least warm statistical facts, as Representative Hunt said, to show us what's happening and then what it is we can do after that. And you're not going to have time 3 weeks from now to respond, because we're going to be moving so fast. And I think that that's going to be absolutely imperative to know what's going on in Wheeler County. We know what's going on in Linn County. As the Linn County Administrator also knows what's going on in legislation, because it was a county commissioner. So we know the process we're going through here. But we need desperately to have that material, or we could make a decision that is disadvantageous to the counties simply based on prudent fiscal management.
Madam Chair, Representative Boquist, I have been in discussions this week with Jeff Hill,
who is the Veteran Services Officer in Washington County, and I believe the president of their county Veteran Services Officers Association. They have put together information, which I received this week, and I think Debbie Kincaid is here to respond, at least in part, to that question. I think has some of that information that she can share with the committee, actually this morning, if you have time.
Yes. Just very quickly, I mean, we're going to be handing a check to 36 counties. I mean, so it's the counties that are going to have to belly up to the bar here and say, this is what we're saying, and this is the help. If you help us, this is what we'll do. And that's going to be coming up here pretty lickety-split, Madam Chair.
That's right.
Thanks.
And our desire, you know, is to do the very best we possibly can to cure the future of our veterans. That's been our purpose since day one. And they, you know, and you have secured ours, and
yes,
at least what we can do. So we can't get in any county, state politics in any form whatsoever. We don't want to go there. We just want to do what's right. Find out what's right, do what's right, so it turns out right for our veterans and their families. And that's going to require a purely objective definition, but we must have some type of assurance that that is the issue that is questioned. When we promote this bill that we've all, you know, worked on, we've got to be able to say truthfully to the others who are going to vote on this, and to the governor, for that matter, who's going to sign it, that we have the assurance this is for the veterans. Like Director Willis says, every day is Veterans mm-hmm. Day. Mm-hmm. Every day that money will be spent purely in this operation. Along with this, what is we're remiss, we have no definitive accountability and responsibilities of our county service officers. In that we can specifically say to the legislature, these are the functions of these individuals, how it's going to take place, what the measure of performance is, as we require, you know, for other entities. So together we've got to make that happen. And I'll call Debbie Kincaid now. Come up and join us, and thank you very much.
Let me excuse myself, but with this note, Madam Chair and Representative Boquist, that's why I have brought to you today Mr. Krosick and Mr. Wyatt.
We're not letting them go.
and we would very much want to work with the committee and assist you in developing a plan and a strategy that we can support, and hopefully the legislature can support at the same time. Okay. Thank you
for being here. If we could just possibly just scoot the chairs over just enough to add one more, because I see Jacqueline Zimmer is joining us, Debbie, rightfully so.
Morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jacqueline Zimmer with the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, helping the County Veteran Services Officers again this session. This is our third session in front of the legislature requesting funds for County Veteran Services Officers. And following up on some of your comments to the county, Mr. Penhallow is correct. We have been in front of Ways and Means for the last two sessions, and that is where the budget notes and the pilot programs were generated from those particular committees. We would have loved to have had your committee in operation at that time, so better late than never. I just want to, before Debbie begins her remarks, the committee has asked for a brochure identifying the County Veteran Services Officers, the counties they represent, and their contact information. Those are nearly complete, and we'll have those for you probably early next week. The County Veteran Services Officers are funding it and putting the brochure together themselves, and we will have copies for you to post in your office, and then we will also have additional copies for you to take to events and distribute them in your district as you see fit. And so if you have an idea of kind of how many of those, keeping in mind that we don't really have a budget for this, we would be happy to share those with you. Probably midweek next week they'll be prepared.
We're thinking 10,000.
10,000. Could we have just a little bit of that acronym fund for that? That would probably be good use of that. Debbie is going to talk about the funding in each particular county, and you do have, I think, some essential paperwork in front of you that reflects the numbers. But also she's going to talk about the functions of the County Veteran Services Officers, and we've listed in those in here for you, and you will see the duties of these County Veteran Services Officers. So they're not without sort of operational roles and you know, job descriptions. So thank you.
Welcome, Debbie.
Thank you. Thanks for having me back. I know that you listened to me at length the last time I was here tell you about the importance of CVSOs, and I talked about the pilot project. There are some questions that you asked that I wanted to give you some specific answers to. The first, on the pilot project, the budget note had indicated that there was an amount not to exceed $370,000 to fund the project in Multnomah County and Washington County, and I was able to talk with my supervisors who said that $300,000 was the actual amount expended on that program. So the savings listed on the initial paperwork that I brought last time was correct. Okay, those figures were good. The second thing that you had asked about was...
Don't give it back to general fund.
Excuse me?
Don't give that money back to general fund. Just kidding. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Before you in your packet today, you also have information that our association has put together over the last couple weeks regarding the staffing levels of each county veteran service office, the funding that they receive, and the source of those funds. As you will see, most counties do receive funds, the maximum amount of funds from ODVA in the amount of $10,072. There was a time when that amount was up to $12,500. The reason it decreased over the years was that more counties in the state were able to submit requests for budget reimbursement out of those same pocket of funds. So the total amount of funds that was available to fund county veteran service officers over the years has not changed, but more counties were able to tap into a greater portion of those funds, which is why it's lower now than it was, let's say, 5 years ago.
So is this program, Mr. Crosby, is this operated as a reimbursement program, or do you receive the monies up front?
We receive a quarterly check
from the
state.
Thank you.
And yes, it is reimbursement. I'm reminded that we do have to prepare a form that says how much we spent on veteran services and what the recoveries for our veterans were in that quarter.
Okay, thank you.
Also,
yes, Representative Kahn.
Madam Chair, also on that, you mentioned measurement and, you know, of what happens. On that same form, there's numbers of contacts with veterans, visits, you know, there's a bunch of statistics that goes in with every quarterly report.
Representative Kahn.
My question is, do you have yearly audits or bi-yearly audits to monitor those expenditures and accounting revenues?
Okay, that question is to you.
Anybody can answer that.
It's part of our annual audit.
Okay, that's what you do have an annual audit.
Yeah.
Okay.
And as John does, I sign each one of those quarterly submissions.
Okay.
To say that actually happened and that's right. So, actually, somebody does look at it.
Just follow up. That means that we could definitely track those funds.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Hey, please continue. Did you have a statement you'd like to make, good administrator?
I know we're running out of time, and so I
that's
hate
okay. We can make it. Just
okay.
This is very important. This is critical.
Okay. There are a couple of points that I want to make. First is regarding veteran population and the CVSOs that county veteran service officers that serve the population in each county. I believe the calculation that the Federal Department of Veterans Affairs has estimated is that for every veteran, there's two or three dependents that could potentially receive services from the department. So these numbers, as far as total veteran population, aren't really a true reflection of our client base.
But I use it just because we don't know. Four to a family is what's a typical.
Okay. Just wanted to make that point there. The other thing, you'll see in the spreadsheet that it identifies county general fund money, Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs or state fund money, and then other funds. And primarily, those funds come from Medicaid. And as I mentioned the last time I was here, and if you've been told before, is that we expect that all of those Medicaid dollars will end on June 30th. So for Washington County, which I can speak to, we will lose $237,000 come June 30th. The bill that's out before the legislature that asked for $5 million over the biennium to fund county veteran service officers, in our county, that money will only make up the loss of Medicaid money. I just wanted to make that, and it will affect some other counties that way as well.
If I could, Madam Chair, just to Jacqueline Zimmer again, when we started creating the dollar amount that we were looking for to fund county veteran services officers, that was well before we had any idea at all that we would lose Medicaid match, and it's also based on a $46,000 salary figure, which I remember we've been working on this for several sessions, and we probably could have amended that and made it a little more realistic to today's figures. But again, just to note that.
50, but
sure,
it seems more right in.
Thank you.
By the time you get the money, it will be. Go ahead, please.
There were a couple other questions that I heard today that I wanted to address. One was your question, Madam Chair, about why can't CVSOs be a part of ODVA? And if you look around the country, it does work that way in some states. There's some states who contract with their county veteran service officers. They send funding to each county to provide for those services. In other states, the county service officer is an employee of the state. And in other states, they have contracted services with not only county employees, veteran service officers, but private organizations such as the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, et cetera. So it is possible to exist that way. I can't really speak to the successes or the organization, which type of organization is, you know, most beneficial to the veteran, but it can work that way.
I will. This is satirical, but I want to find out which way Illinois does it. That's what we don't want to do. She can find out. Sit there and get the lowest amount of money. Okay, cool.
And,
yeah, please.
The other question or statistic that I wanted to comment on, and I arrived late this morning, so I apologize. There was a mention that Washington County ranks second in veteran population and yet ranks lowest among all 34 counties in the per capita dollars received from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs.
Yes.
The explanation that I believe is correct for that is that the federal government mandates that payments to veterans be made via direct deposit, if that's at all possible.
Say that very slowly.
The VA, and I'm not quite sure the name of the act, but there's a cost reduction act that said that veterans who receive monies from VA should receive those by direct deposit. And many of the veterans who live in Clackamas County and Washington County receive their direct deposits in a financial institution in Portland as their headquartered bank there. So those deposits are being made to a financial institution in a Portland zip code, Multnomah County zip code, which is why our per capita numbers are lower than what I believe should be the true number.
One explanation we hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm.
Takes a genius from the county to let us know.
One time.
That's right. Come back more often.
Okay. And the other thing, and I'm sorry to be haphazard, along with the veteran population and the number of dependents that we serve, there's also a type of assistance that we provide that's not really reflected in these numbers, and that is the information and referral service that we provide to the residents of our county about veteran services, how to access those programs, and the one-time problems that we solve for people. For example, why didn't I get my check this month? Or how can I add my dependent onto my award? I need to change facilities and transfer that money. And there's a lot of one-time issues that we deal with or crises that we deal with that really aren't accounted for in our caseload whatsoever. And I wanted to make that point. I hope that we've brought the information that you asked for on the pilot project, the funding, the county staffing, and funding allocations. I'd be happy to answer any other questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. You're outstanding. I just want to say in your reporting, and thank you for your excellent follow-up. I'd like to ask the two county administrators on the issue of Medicaid versus veteran benefits. I want to ask you, first of all, are you aware of this pilot project that was conducted?
No, I'm not.
No.
Okay. Could you explain it, Debbie, please? Just briefly, and then get an answer.
Quickly, the pilot project was a directive by the Oregon legislature to show that federal VA money that comes into counties to Medicaid long-term care clients can save or lower expenditures by the state for long-term care. So our goal was to identify persons on Medicaid long-term care rolls and help them to receive VA benefits, which they in turn would use to pay for their care, which would then lower the state's cost. And we did that for a one-year period. We were given $300,000 to run the program. We generated a savings of approximately $450,000, so a net of about $150,000. Those same people continue to receive benefits to this day. Current year two savings were over $1 million from those same clients, and the clients that we continue to serve without the funding from the pilot project, and it's running over $800,000 a year currently.
So
that was in Washington County alone. Thank you.
And of course, those freed Medicaid dollars, then can be used in other programs that are now suffering. At the same time, we wanted to make it perfectly clear that not one veteran has to sacrifice, as we heard on the Veterans Home Program, sacrifice a nursing home of his choice because a home wouldn't be certified by the veterans or some other reason. So we have had this continuing debate, and I guess what I'm asking is we need to ask you, county fiscal officers, to get together with your county veterans service officers and evaluate this program. Out of that, what we would want to see is, and we're almost to the point now where we see that the veteran benefits are huge and are more encompassing than the Medicaid dollars. If we knew the system totally and invested more dollars with our county service officers and training and understanding all the everything Washington, D.C., junks on us, so far as paperwork and policies. So we really need to evaluate this program by county. Need to know if it's something we need to push further. We need an estimate of how much we would recover in Medicaid dollars per county. It's a critical issue right now. At the same time, we want to be sure that the main criteria is that our veterans get everything that's possibly possible anywhere in the system, because they deserve the very utmost of our care and attention. Jacqueline, is that clear?
Madam Chair, that is clear. And just if I may, the troubling piece to this, and there's always this sort of a little wrench that gets thrown in, is that during the last legislative session, seniors and people with disabilities at levels 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17 lost services from the state if they were Medicaid clients. Some of those were veterans. And so what that meant was the state would no longer, provide those services to them. They could purchase their long-term care services elsewhere with the funding that they received. And that's another reason why this is so critical, is because veterans then had federal benefits that they could use to purchase private care to help recover from this loss of federal of services. This biennium, levels 12 and 13 are back, but unfortunately for us, in the governor has a recommendation in his budget that caps the number of people that we can serve in our long-term care system at 21,500. And so if 21,501 happens to be a veteran, whether they're a level 10 or a 2, or, I mean, it really doesn't matter, they're on a... we haven't figured out how to do this, but essentially they're on a waiting list along with everybody else. So that's the other sort of danger that's out there. It's very real for anybody in our system who needs services, is that the veteran or the senior or the disabled, younger disabled person will then be put on a waiting list. There'll no longer be relative foster care for them. A lot of these veterans are cared for by their family members. I mean, there's so many different areas that the governor slashed that that this becomes even more important now as a source of stable funding for Oregon's veterans and their family.
Thank you very much. Could we ask Diane, maybe, Jacqueline, you'd change what that musical chairs here would play. I'd just like to hear Diane Salenti, another outstanding veteran service officer like Pat is here, and Debbie. And do you want to be sure, do you understand what we're asking?
Yes.
And do you think it's possible that we could do this and fully evaluate it?
I do it in an informal way in Yamhill County now because I have, through the association, they've shared the success. But
would you...
I'm Diane Salenti. I'm the County Veterans Service Officer from Yamhill County. And yes, we are afflicted with acronyms, and we're sorry. But that's the only way you survive.
But you think this is possible that
yes,
we could do this? And could I ask Pat Britton, is this possible that we could do this? It's a very serious, and it's a huge, huge amount of money.
Yes, Madam Chairman, I do feel we could work on that.
Thank you. Is that Ralph?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you. And
I'm always after money, as is John.
Okay. Well, what we want to be sure of is we're banking dollars for our veterans, and that's our purpose, and for their spouses and the other needs of bridging, like you heard, those that live with 30 measly dollars to pay for anything. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they even have toothbrushes, but I just think it's time for us to realize that they come first. So we would appreciate that, and we appreciate this report. Do you have any other remarks, Debbie?
My last comment, I guess, would be that you've asked for an accountability piece on how we could guarantee that the state's getting a bang for their buck if they do fund county veteran service officers, and the association is actively working on a proposal to present to the committee on how to do that. We're looking at other states who do fund county veteran service officers, looking at how they do their accounting piece as a model, and we hope to have something developed within the next several weeks.
Well, just don't delay. We're wanting to be the first in before the dollars are gone. And so I appreciate your leadership, this team, and making this happen. And we certainly would appreciate that, as well as I think Representative Hunt's going to stay on this insurance, assurance.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess especially for those of you who are veteran service officers, and as you're working with your association, comparing with other states, I think, is a good comparison. That's a good piece of information. I guess the other thing I'd urge you to keep in mind, though, is not just with this committee, but looking at the Ways and Means process. We and they are going to be comparing dollars to dollars. So a dollar invested in expanding veteran service officers versus a dollar invested in expanding educational benefits for veterans versus a dollar for employment benefits for veterans. And I don't think, looking at any of those other dollars, there are going to be potential issues around fear of dollars being backfilled out. And so I guess I'd just urge you to be really careful and cautious as you're working with the elected officials from your counties to bring forward a proposal that, you know, if it's not guaranteeing no backfilled dollars, that it's getting as close as you possibly can. Because as we look at comparative investments in education, it's not going to be an issue that an educational institution is going to, I don't think anyway, is going to backfill some dollars out of that in order to replace this, or an employment investment, or transportation, or anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So just the comparison with other states, I think, is fine as one piece. I would just urge you to to be thinking more holistically, because we really are looking for the investment that expand it so that every dollar expand, that we invest expands services to veterans.
Madam Chair, can I give you an illustration from Yamhill County? And I know I'm prejudiced. I don't want to work for the state because I have the best boss. I'm not trading him. He's younger than me, and I'm going to retire before he does because I like him.
Well, having served on his budget committee, well, so do I.
Yes, and we both know that he's very fiscally responsible.
And having served on your seniors' park transportation committee.
But in answer, Representative Hunt, to your concerns about accountability, Mr. Krosick's very upfront about, I'm sorry, there's no money. What you have is what you get. And yet the demand has grown since I started because, as I told him, I hate to be bored. And so I'm involved, and I came with a whole bunch of stuff to tell you that I do. But because he keeps telling me I have no more money to put in my budget for veterans, and yet the need grows, I have recruited ongoing work studies every year who have saved my life. But I also have volunteers who come day after day. I have a man, when we brought the veterans, we had to bring the veterans van dispatch back in-house, which almost killed me because I thought I was going to have to work till 9 at night. That's what I used to do. I'm not going to do that again. I now have a very faithful man who comes in 5 days a week from 8 to 11. He does all the dispatching. The only economic impact for our office was we had to buy a computer and, you know, a workstation for him. But, you know, I was able to work. The workstation came out of the cast-offs in the basement, and I got the computer, you know, out of my budget. But I have been able to. I had a volunteer comes in, and she does data entry. We're finally getting into the 20th century, which is still archaic, but it's better than what I had. But I have volunteers who've done my, I've done the criminal history check on them, and so I trust them enough to do the data entry. But if I did 7 years with nonprofits before I came to John. I said, if you don't give me the money, I'll just go raise it, and he asked me not to. So instead, I've gone and recruited volunteers who are highly committed to what we're trying to do, who've seen the impact. Widows who, one of the things, I need to change subjects for a minute, because one of the things you're saying is, we're losing World War II guys. Well, that's the end of that statistic. I'm sorry, it's not. What you have now is a widow who could be 2 years younger than him or 25 years younger than him. Now, that's not going to show on your statistics. And yet, like Debbie said, they may come in 14 times for little things because Charlie did everything and didn't teach her how to do anything. So we are their very best gift from their deceased husband because we have to help them learn to do those things and file their claims. But there's always a way, and each CDSO is different in how they're creative. When the Indians wanted, when Grand Ronde Tribe asked me to come out, my commissioners and their council came up with an intergovernment agreement where the commissioners provide me and my services, and the council provides an office space, the utilities, all the equipment, the cleaning, the other part of that component. So it has worked very well for 10 years? No, not that long, but
five
anyway. And I attend both their veterans powwow and the regular powwow. And we have, this is another coordinated effort. We have state, ODVA staff comes, and federal people come. So that they get hands-on, like, not Val, but different people that do jobs like hers will come so that they can meet people from the state and get an idea, and they can meet politicians. But to me, it's real important that they meet the government with skin on, because sometimes Debbie and Pat and I are you with skin on. They need to be able to talk to us until they figure out what they're really mad about so that we can help them write a letter to you. And so a good portion of our job is you're paying us to listen until that person can sort out, because they've waited so long and talked to Charlie Henry and so-so for 50 years before they ever came to see us. And our job is to help them sort out what they really need and to treat them with honor and dignity, always.
Well, you've certainly done an excellent job. I want to thank you very much, Pat and Ralph and Debbie and Diane and John. Thank you very much for being here, and on behalf of our committee, know how grateful we are, and also for the veterans. We have to go to session here
and
protect the money that we might have later for you.
Thank you.
So thank you so much for all you do. The meeting's adjourned.